Cass and Kane will wax. A few minutes past 4 p.m. Sorry to say, lovely day out there. It's lovely coming through the blinds of the Kane Wax windows.
It's lovely when you're inside with air conditioning.
I'm kidding. This is the Think Tank. We usually do it Tuesdays. We got to move things around. Representative Ian Mackey is with us. Dennis Hancock, who is running to be the next county executive on the Republican ticket. Ian, you look relaxed.
Oh, I'm pretty relaxed. Yeah. spent the entire day in the air conditioning and enjoying it. Enjoying
good.
The break. Yes,
good for you.
For sure. Absolutely.
Dennis, how do I say this? What the hell's happening? Like, what's going on? Like, every time I turn, it used to be the city, and now it's the county. Like,
yeah, you know, it's hard to say, Dave. I think it's a combination of lack of leadership coming from the executive's office. And I think it's you know, you have seven strong personalities on the council, and it's very difficult to find common ground with the county executive because we really don't know where he is on positions, on issues.
Yeah.
And so we try to do what we can to guide the county in the direction we think it needs to be going in.
Yeah. If you prevail, and by the way, for anyone who's listening, I like you a lot. I think you're a smart, reasonable dude.
Thank you.
How would you handle this differently than Dr. Page has?
Well, I think the first thing you have to do is build those relationships with the council members. And, you know, I was a mayor for 12 years, and there were times when I had a lot of friends on the council, and there were times when I didn't have any friends on the council. But you learn how to work through those things, and you learn how to not take it personally.
Yeah.
You know, it's politics. It's not somebody telling me that Dennis Hancock is a bad so-and-so. It's them telling Dennis Hancock, the mayor, county executive, county council member, that he's a bad so-and-so.
And you know this. You both know this. That's what the people hate. Like, we get to MF each other, but you guys don't because, hey, you're doing the people's business.
Right.
You keep it above board. You keep it professional. And when you guys act like we act, we get disappointed.
Right. And, yeah, we're supposed to be the leaders. And if we work together, we can do some really good things. What's always impressed me over the last couple of years on the council is we have three Democrats and three Republicans who work together very closely on most of the issues. And, and we arrive at really, really good decisions, even though we may be coming at them from different directions.
Yeah. In your area in the county, like how much interplay is there between state reps and mayors, county executives of your area?
It depends. You know, there's a lot of folks who, you know, will show up in my inbox and they need help with something with the county department or county level. And I'll run interference with them, try to get them connected to the right people. That kind of customer service management thing, which is a big part of, I think, any of our jobs in elected office. But I think it just depends on the portfolio of issues I'm working on. So when city-county merger is a hot topic and I have a bill hearing on that, there's a lot of interaction with the mayors and the alder people and the council members. When I'm, you know, in the education zone I'm in and working on school bills, not so much. So it really just depends on the issues that are you know, rising to the surface. I try to stay, you know, I'm not one of those reps that goes to every single city council meeting all the time, but certainly in each other's inboxes, checking in, certainly around, you know, ballot campaigns, local issues that are up on, you know, the April ballot or the August ballot, and just staying connected with the constituents we have in common.
Yeah. I wanted to talk about Amendment 4, and I'll fall on my sword. I don't know much about it at all. I've seen a couple of ads. Rach, I know you're fairly passionate about it. You want to roll it out for me?
Yeah. So Amendment 4 would mean that if there was an amendment that was proposed by an initiative petition, meaning the voters bring this, it has to pass by a majority in every district in order for it to pass. But the amendments that the legislature places on the ballot still just have to pass by simple statewide majority. I just don't understand why the voters vote should mean less than the legislature.
Yeah. Ian, decode this for us.
Oh, gosh. Well, I have to separate my brain because I'm somebody who really wants to see the initiative petition process go away. I'm not one of these people that believes in direct democracy. I think it's a terrible way to write policy. I think our Constitution is bloated. I hate seeing four and five different amendments of the election. I hate seeing our side, you know, the pro-choice side, for example, spend millions and millions and millions of dollars just for 2 years later for it to be overturned. Then 2 years later, we go back. There's a reason why we're elected. There's a reason why we're in public office. There's a reason why our constituents and our voters sent us there. And it's because we're a representative democracy and we're sent there to make laws. doing it this whole other way where we silo issues is ridiculous. That said, Amendment 4 is also ridiculous. It's just for one reason is what Rachel said, but also the idea that, and I think these numbers were ran by the Missouri Independent, it's 78% of Missourians, I think, could vote for an issue,
yeah,
and 22% could vote against the issue, and those 22% would have the veto power to say this issue is not going to pass. You know, that's the extreme that you could see happen. But I think that extreme aside, I think there's plenty of times where you would see 50, even 60% or even 65% of Missourians say this is something we want, and that small minority would veto. I don't think that that is necessarily wise, especially when it's just for citizen petitions and not for legislative petitions. Yeah,
Dennis, your thoughts?
Yeah, I think that the bar to change the state constitution should be pretty high. You know, I've heard people suggest things like 57% or even 60%. I'd probably be for that, just because it's the law of the land in the state of Missouri, and it should be difficult to pass. As far as Amendment 4, I think the process is broken, like a lot of government processes are, and it needs to be fixed. Is this the perfect fix? Probably not. But at the same time, you know, we can't let perfect be the enemy of good. And I think that there will be more good come out of Amendment 4 as it's written than there would be to wait a few more years as we see a lot of out-of-state money coming in to change the Missouri Constitution. And then after the election, they don't have to live with the consequences.
Would I be crazy to say that this is giving power to land rather than population? Because what we're doing is saying that just because you're in a certain district, whether you have 100 people or 10,000 people, that district carries the same weight as the district with more people. If we're saying that it has to be the same in everyone, if it were a higher standard of the vote, that makes a lot of sense to me. If mm-hmm. it's going to be difficult, that seems weird. It seems normal. But it seems what we're doing is prioritizing. Well, I mean, let's be honest. It's prioritizing rural areas over the cities. It's so that the cities, because they have the population, don't get to dictate too many things, which is why a higher standard makes sense. Mm-hmm. But if we're simply saying that it's land that gets it, because that's what we're talking about when we look at how things are drawn up. It's essentially land gaining the power as opposed to the number of people having the vote.
Yeah, and I think that's a good point, Kevin. And, you know, I think it's trying to emulate the Electoral College.
Right.
You know, where if we didn't have some vehicle like that, New York and California would run the country. And the rest of us would have no say at all in what's going on. And so I think there's a there's a median there somewhere.
Right, because my argument against the way it's done with the Electoral College is that it actually strips power from everyone. Mm-hmm. If you're a Republican in California, you have no presidential vote. Your vote is irrelevant. Mm-hmm. If you are a Democrat in Texas, or maybe that's not a great example, Louisiana, Mississippi, your vote is meaningless for president of the United States. It means nothing. So I know it's a difficult balance because, you know, straight mm-hmm. population, popular vote seems like the most logical. Right. Every person has one vote. One vote counts for one, mm-hmm. as opposed to one vote in one state counting for one and a half and another one counting for five.
Right.
And, you know, the out of state money point that he brought up, I think, is the argument you hear to Rachel's point about why it's affecting citizen initiatives instead of the ones on the legislature. But that out of state money, almost all of it is connected to organizations that have a presence in our state. When people say out of state money, they're talking about Planned Parenthood money from national Planned Parenthood organizations. Well, we have a Planned Parenthood here in Missouri. ACLU is the same thing. We have these organizations exist. They have a presence in our state. They have volunteers in our state. They have members in our state. What is wrong with their national organization investing in issues that these people care about in our state? I would say there's absolutely nothing wrong with that.
Yeah. So on the think tank, as you guys know, I typically try to keep it pretty nuts and bolts, pretty local, because I don't think it's fair to ask a state legislator or a county executive to, you know, carry water for Trump or to go after Trump. But I will ask you guys sort of a 30,000 foot view question. Saturday is July 4th, and we're celebrating the 250th anniversary of the founding of our country. And you can't go to any website that covers politics or news without seeing that it is so divided, and a lot of people who are not Republicans, who are not MAGA, feel that, and we talked about this about a week ago, feel that MAGA has tried to appropriate patriotism and the flag and eagles, and that the other side feels so much less not so much less patriotic, just sort of defeated, you know? And if I put a flag on my truck, people are going to think I'm MAGA, XYZ. 250 is a big deal. It's a big deal. We should all be celebrating however we celebrate, whatever our politics. And I just would like you two gentlemen just to kind of, you know, opine on that. Dennis?
Yeah, I think, and I think that that's the shame of it, because it is 250 years. We, if anything should be bringing us together, it should be this. And, you know, when you look at, you know, St. Louis County canceled the fireworks celebration at Jefferson Barracks this year. This is the year we should have done it. We should have canceled something else, probably. You know, last night at the council meeting, I read the first half of the Declaration of Independence, because I don't think most people have ever read it. And you, when you read it and you absorb it, and I know there's a lot of, you know, angst about, well, they talk about all men being created equal, so that doesn't apply to women, it doesn't apply to others of African descent or whatever. It does. It does today. And I think that, you know, we have to get beyond our own personal views of these things and start thinking in terms of, you know, what's best for the nation, what's best for our country. You know, if you stop and think about it, the words of the Declaration of Independence is just a list of grievances against their government, and they're saying, we're not going to take it anymore. And, you know, we hear that all the time. You know, we have people that come to the council meetings who, you know, are Palestinian supporters and, you know, anti-Israel. We listen to them. You know, we don't necessarily have to agree, but we listen. And they come to us and air their grievances. And there are other people that come and air their grievances. And that's really what I think our job as government should be, is to listen to those people and listen to what their grievances are, because maybe we can do something to change their lives.
Yeah. I mean, the Republican politicians, especially at the national level, have done a good job from their perspective, branding the flag and branding patriotism. I mean, I remember, you know, I was in high school during 9/11. I remember, you know, what the big piece of legislation passed right after was called the Patriot Act. What did it mean to be a patriot? It meant letting the government wiretap you. If you didn't want the government to wiretap you, you weren't a patriot, right? You know, when Barack Obama was running for president in 2008 with John McCain, Sarah Palin going around talking about what real Americans are and what real Americans believe. That carried over through 2010 and the Tea Party years. Real Americans were, like we were just talking about, they don't live in New York City. They don't live in California. Those aren't real Americans. Real Americans live here. That kind of rhetoric and talk of co-opting that image and that flag and what patriotism is has permeated our political discourse and sort of, you know, divided it.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I'm going to celebrate, of course. But, you know, it irritates me that, you know, like you said, the image of just having a flag decal on your car.
Yeah.
It's because of that rhetoric that's, you know, from my experience, I mean, it's probably going on longer. From my experience, you know, been going on for the last 20 years.
Yeah. Kev Rach went in on this at all?
I mean, I think the whole idea of the real American basically just means the people that agree with us. That's what it is. Because you're trying to build that relationship that says we're the only people that get you. And to agree, they're not wrong. Like, there have been people that have been kind of left out.
Yeah.
And they, and at least if, even if it's not provable scientific, they certainly feel that way. And that's a justified thing. But at the same time, people want to complain about the divide. I mean, that's it. The one thing we shouldn't be divided about is whether or not just being an American is enough.
Yeah.
Because that's what makes being a citizen is what makes you an American. It's what Brad brought up earlier with the Ronald Reagan speech, right? You can't move to France and become a Frenchman. You can't move to Japan and become a Japanese person. You can be a citizen, and you are an American when you move here and become a citizen.
Yeah,
it doesn't have to have a traditional, historic, or ethnic background to be that.
Yes, and KMOX. We have Representative Ian Mackey with us, and Dennis Hancock, who is running for the St. Louis County Executive on the Republican side. Ian, I said I want to ask you something political, but also personal. You're a gay man, a very handsome gay man, by the way.
Thank you.
And the vice president said in an interview last night, we have the sound, we already played it once, but we're kind of short on time, where he's talking about how hideous and disgusting he finds these signs that people put in their yard, and he described them as, "In this home, we support, all love is love." And he's just rolling his eyes and blah blah blah. And he's like, "I just find it so hideous and disgusting." That makes me feel so icky as not a gay man. Mm-hmm. How does that hit you?
Yeah, no, it does. It's. I didn't think we would be, as somebody who, you know, graduated high school in 2004 when 70% of our state said no gay marriage, as somebody who's been in a gay marriage for 13 years now and seen the progress we've made, I didn't think that we would have somebody as high profile as our vice president of the United States making remarks like that. But there's a lot of stuff I didn't think I would see in Trump 1.0 or 2.0. A lot of things that I think caused regression on a number of issues in our country. I didn't think we would have a United States Supreme Court 5-4 saying birthright citizenship is in the 14th Amendment and we follow the Constitution. I didn't think that would be a question. So I continue to be surprised. We see a support for gay marriage slipping in polls. We see it continuing to backslide from its height back, you know, shortly after it became legal in all 50 states. Hopefully it's, you know, as with most fight for rights, it's two steps forward, one step back. I think that's how it's been for just about every marginalized group in this country. And I guess that's what we're in right now. Hopefully this is as far back as we go before we again start charging forward.
Yeah. Dennis, when's your election?
I don't have a primary opponent, so I go through to the November 4th, I believe it is.
Okay. How you feeling?
You know, I think that we've got a good message and we're getting it out there. As I'm sure Ian knows, you can always use more money. But we have a message of, you know, bringing competence back to government, bringing, an understanding of leadership, bringing experience into the job that others don't have. And I think that by doing that, I think people it's resonating with people.
Yeah. Well, good luck to you. We'll have you on plenty of times before then. Thank you, boys. Appreciate it.